Support for this podcast comes from the UTSA Institute of Texan Cultures, telling stories of Texas history and heritage from diverse cultures that define the state's unique character for over 50 years. Details at texancultures.utsa.edu.
Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Texas has hit a new high with COVID-19 cases, as with 2,504 new cases being reported. We know that the 42% increase we've seen of hospitalizations from COVID-19 have happened in Texas since Memorial Day weekend. We're seeing the spread of coronavirus certainly in Texas, and this is despite the reopening of the state, and now we're seeing protest in the streets of Texas, and this is certainly could set up the more spread of COVID-19 as people want to protest what they find to be extremely important to them. How do we protest safely during a pandemic? We're joined by Monique Jimenez, Doctor of Science, Epidemiology Professor at Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health. Monique Jimenez, welcome to The Source.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us, Avon Connor, PhD, Professor of Epidemiology at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. Avon Connor, welcome to The Source.
Thank you for having me also.
Monique Jimenez, if a person goes into a protest, are they going to be exposed or have a higher risk of exposure of coronavirus than you feel comfortable with?
I think there are some very important ways that people can protect themselves. We have seen definitely some upticks that, as you had mentioned previously, we expect to be related to people going out and also congregating around Memorial Day, Mother's Day as well. So I think social distancing has always been a issue of people being able to weigh when they can their own personal risk to benefit. Very large proportions of our country, Black and brown people in particular, have not been able, in a lot of ways, been able to make those same choices. And so I think the key message is for those who are protesting, how to do it safely, such as wearing a mask. One of the things that has been brought up frequently about protests is screaming and yelling and singing as well. And so one of the recommendations that we have is for people to bring noisemakers with them, use signs, bring noisemakers so that they can make sure that their voice is being heard. They're also participating in a way that feels authentic and important to them, but yet at the same time protecting themselves and others around them, in addition to eye protection. As we have seen in many locations, there have been the use of quote-unquote non-lethal tactics by police departments to manage crowds. We also in the public health community feel that this can be done in a way that is less dangerous to the people who are protesting, because a lot of those methods, such as corralling and also the use of pepper spray and tear gas, may actually increase somebody's risk of contracting the virus by the irritation and potential trauma, going to the hospital, also the arrest. So we want people to be able to exercise their rights to protest, but also be able to protect themselves and those around them.
So Avon Connor, we know that the best way to deal with coronavirus is through social distancing, because humans are the vector of this disease. And if you can have a nice, safe distance with folks, then maybe you won't get it. But that doesn't really seem to be something that can happen at one of these protests. Despite some of these good ideas that people put forth, things are pretty hectic out on the streets. So, you know, what do you make of that?
I want to first mention that we, as a public health entity, have identified racism as a public health problem. So I feel like we are dealing with two pandemics right now. And going along with your other speakers' comments about how we can personally evaluate our risk and understand the risk and benefits of making the choice to protest. So going to, back to your question, I think that what a lot of people I've known are doing who are actually protesting here in Baltimore are going with their personal network or quarantine bubble. So they're staying with their group that they've already been socially distancing with, in addition to, of course, wearing masks and bringing additional masks for people who might not have masks at the protest. Also, just the general idea of if you're feeling unwell, to stay home. You know, there are other ways to actually protest without being out in crowds and being around other people who you might not be able to distance from. I think another way for cities to get more involved, to not only kind of, you know, push people to say, yes, we agree, this is a problem, we want you out in the streets, we want you to be getting your voices out there. We can think about ways that city officials can promote testing after protesting. So if you've been in a protest recently, maybe you should go get tested. And also, in the meantime, you can socially distance yourself from others who might not have gone with you to the protest, or say you live in a household with other people who are vulnerable to coronavirus. It's a good idea to think about ways that you can distance yourself from them after protesting.
Monique Jimenez, is it what are we telling people to do? I mean, we want people to have the right to protest. They should be able to express their outrage and demand for police reform, yet we're dealing with the spread of the coronavirus. It doesn't seem like these are two things that work well together. How do we manage that? We can do all these great ideas that you talked about. I like the noisemaker idea. Trying to go, that idea that we heard from Avon about go with a group of friends and hang out with that group of friends and use that as a way to avoid coming into contact with people that might be infectious. But it still seems pretty high risk. But people, and they fear that, but the systemic racism is so big a deal. It is impacting someone. It's been happening for generations after generations. They feel like, do you think they feel like this, they have to go out?
Yeah, I mean, I think I completely agree with Dr. Connor's statement that we have two pandemics, and actually we might even consider them almost one and the same, right? When we think about the communities that have been hardest hit by coronavirus, the COVID-19 pandemic, it is our populations that are Black and Latino. It is our populations that have had vulnerabilities imposed upon them, that have had lived for generations with resource deprivation due to our history of slavery in this country. And so this outrage is not new. This outrage has been lived with, and we see that manifestation within the bodies of communities of color, in particular Black individuals in the United States. And so I think it's difficult to have any conversation about COVID without talking about structural racism. And so in a lot of ways, they are part and parcel of one another, because COVID has laid bare a lot and all of the inequities that are really structurally embedded, even within our medical system.
We have on Facebook some comments of Michael. History is recording that they are risking their lives to protest. And Frank on Facebook said, some things are worth dying for. Avon Connor at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health, asking people to die in order to protest, that's a big ask.
It is, and I totally agree. I actually have friends who are in Louisville, Kentucky. My hometown is Louisville, and we have our own problems going on there with the police department and the unlawful killing of Breonna Taylor. And a lot of my friends, personal friends, are out there in the streets every day protesting. And they have actually said, like, this is the risk I'm willing to take. So I think that it's a big ask, but we as public health professionals have to safeguard ourselves and safeguard the community to give them the recommendations or the risk-reducing strategies that we can do our best to, if you're going to make that choice, these are things you have to do. And you have to protect others, and you have to protect the vulnerable as well. So if you're making that choice, it kind of goes back to that idea of, like, we've been out here protesting, we have to think about others who aren't doing it, and also protect them as well. So if that means getting a COVID test, if that means socially distance yourself from your parents and your grandparents and others after you've, you know, been out in the streets among the crowds, is something that you have to do.
Larry on Facebook says, if I didn't have an underlying health issue, I'd be out there with them. Sadly, I'm regulated to being a keyboard activist for this duration. Monica Jimenez, if you have an underlying health condition, should people stay home?
I think it's really important, absolutely, for people to weigh their own personal risks. This is something that I very closely identify with myself because I'm asthmatic. And so personally, you know, I've gone to one protest in a very controlled environment where I could make sure that I was, you know, be able to maintain my distance from others. And so these are hard choices for people to make because their hearts want to be there. But as Dr. Connor mentioned, there are many other ways that we can be involved in dismantling structural racism in our country. And not all of them mean protesting. And for some, that is the way. And for others, there are other avenues that we can be advocating and that we can be educating, and that we can also be doing some very deep work in educating ourselves so that we're also individually not contributing to a system that is a part of the social fabric of this country.
So this is my big question I wonder about. So right now we're seeing all the numbers here in Texas, they're going in the wrong direction. In other states, particularly in the South, areas where really these protests really should be most heard, the numbers for COVID are going in the wrong direction. If things get really, really bad and we see another shutdown of the economy and restaurants are shut down and bars and malls and theme parks, Should we shut down protest? Should this protest say, listen, we need to hit pause on this because the public health concerns have gotten too great? I mean, is that something that, how would you react to that if that was proposed, Avon Connor?
I don't think we should ever shut down protest. I feel that it's our rights as Americans to stand up for what we believe in and have our voices heard. And I think that just going back to the fundamentals of what we can do to safely protest has to be done. And that also includes having the police officers wear masks as well. That's not like something that's been totally done across the board. I've seen like different cities have different policies, I guess, on the officials wearing masks. But thinking more about what can we do to reduce our risk if we are out there. And again, going back to Dr. Jimenez's idea, if you feel that your risk is too high, say you have an underlying condition, you should probably think of other ways that you could protest to not put yourself at increased risk.
Monica Jimenez, I mean, the Supreme Court has ruled that states can order churches closed. So we can order churches closed, but not order protests to be shut down because of public health?
Yeah, it's a tricky question, and I will say that I am not a lawyer, so but it is a fundamental constitutional right for us to protest. It's a little bit different, I think, than religious activities, because most religious activities tend to be in enclosed spaces, and the one benefit of outside protests are that there is the potential for spacing. I think this is another place where I would like to see individual cities and towns and the police departments within those places working more closely with public health professionals to understand how can they better support safe protesting for individuals that keeps everyone safe, keeping the protesters safe in addition to the law enforcement that are there managing.
Well, we saw open up the government protesters that happened a few weeks ago. They were protesting in their cars sometimes. Of course, having a vehicle is economic privilege. But is that something that we could, you know, think about doing something like that, Avon?
Yes, I actually totally agree with that. I believe here in Baltimore, the first protest we officially had was a car caravan. I think that because technically we were still under stay home orders, but I think that's a great idea, especially for older people who might want to be get out there but are afraid, you know, or are leery of being out in crowds, that being in your car is another way to protest. You can use your horns. You can be with your personal network and still get your voices heard.
All right, we're talking about protesting in the time of a pandemic. How do you weigh social distancing as you are fired up about doing something about social justice? When we come back from the break, we're joined by Dan Diamond. He is with Politico, reporter there, investigating health care policies and politics. The number to call in is 833-877-8255. The Source continues right after this.
George Floyd's death has sparked demonstrations unlike any others.
You're seeing black, you're seeing brown, you're seeing white, Asian, you name it. The color of the rainbow is a remarkable thing for this movement.
Former police officer and author of Black Klansmen, Ron Stallworth, reflects on the movement. Next time on Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez. Download Fronteras wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about safely protesting in the time of a pandemic. Is that possible? How can you do that? And what are the politics and public safety concerns of what is happening right now? We're joined by Dan Diamond. He investigates healthcare politics and policy for Politico. And Dan Diamond, welcome to The Source. It's great to have you.
David, thanks for having me.
So what is happening right now with the White House, with the coronavirus task force? It seems like as we're seeing numbers shooting back up, are they gearing back up?
Well, what is happening right now with the White House task force is actually not as much. The task force used to meet every day. In my reporting story that went up on Politico yesterday, I reported that it's now only meeting twice per week. The daily press conference has been discontinued for the past 45 days. There were some complaints that press conference had been hijacked by President Trump, who, instead of talking just about coronavirus, would take that press conference in all kinds of different directions and in some ways that were really distracting and perhaps even harmful to the public health message. But the White House believes that at this point in the outbreak, it's on the states that they have done what they need to do at the White House. They've delivered supplies. They're focusing on vaccines and treatment. And the outbreaks around the country, including in your state, Texas, are very much the responsibility of local leaders.
It's been said that we're in the nothing to see here phase of the pandemic. The COVID-19 is still out there. The numbers are getting worse. People are going to the hospital. Here in Texas, it's getting the numbers are climbing higher and higher. Record 3 days of record numbers. Yet we're not hearing from the White House and from some of these people in the task force about what to do.
Well, there is a continued push to stick to the best practices of hand sanitizer, socially distancing when possible. I interviewed the U.S. Surgeon General for Politico's podcast today, and he talked about all of the things that we've been doing for the past couple months. We do need to continue to do the best of our ability. But the president does not want to talk about the pandemic anymore. He wants to get to talking about his reelection campaign, about the economy, and it is a major wrench in his plans that the pandemic continues. The fact that he is moving forward with political rallies in the near future, starting in Oklahoma, speaks to he wants to get out on the road and not be stuck dealing with COVID-19, even though we're still in the middle of this raging problem.
So we have a clip from your interview with the Surgeon General, Jerome Adams.
George Floyd is the same age that I am. I look at him and I really do think that could have been me. That could be me pulled over for speeding 5 miles over the speed limit. That could be me with a busted taillight. That could be me who is just seen as a black man and not as the Surgeon General of the United States.
That's powerful coming from the Surgeon General of the United States, Dan Diamond. He said a lot.
He did. He is the top doctor in the country. He's also a black man. He is someone that I very much wanted to talk to about structural racism, about the responsibility of public health leaders in the middle of an outbreak. I'd written a story last week about the tension between the messages on whether Americans should stay home during the pandemic versus participate in the protests. We talked about that too, and how difficult it is to balance the dual pandemics. I believe one of your guests got to this as well. Structural racism has caused problems in healthcare for decade upon decade. At the same time, we're dealing with a infectious disease pandemic that has killed 100,000 people plus already. So it's a very difficult time to be a public health leader and for the Surgeon General to look at George Floyd and see the similarities. He's not the only leader in healthcare, the only African-American or member of a community of color who sees parallels between his experience and what happened to Mr. Floyd.
Now, you mentioned that President Trump is going back to his rallies. It's just not in Oklahoma. It's in Tulsa, the scene of the attack on Black Wall Street. It's not just a rally on a Friday. It's a rally on Juneteenth. Is it just a coincidence that this is how this new rally is going to be broken out?
David, I've learned as a reporter, I should stick to reporting what I know and not what I suspect. So while I think there are reasons to ask questions about the timing and location, I do not have that personally reported that Donald Trump and his team are deliberately choosing the day and place. I think it's an interesting hypothesis that might be borne out by reporting, but it's not something that I've personally looked into.
Let me go back to Monique Jimenez, Doctor of Science, Epidemiology Professor at Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health. When you hear that President Trump is resuming his rallies, particularly as we talk about protesting in a pandemic, this is another close quarters type of event where there's going to be a lot of yelling and chanting and people in close proximity. But also, this is happening in Tulsa and on Juneteenth. What does all that say to you?
I think I can see where the general public feels like they are getting perhaps differing messages on how to manage their risk. I think we have to, my message is that we need to choose our places of risk and our causes for those risks carefully. And if they're, you know, I think we do want to minimize large groups of people when it's not necessary. We also want to make sure that people have the right to exercise their constitutional rights, you know, to protest. And so it's challenging, and I would hope that measures are put in place so that any types of these congregations are done in a way that is safe.
Okay. So Dan Diamond, your recent article, suddenly public health officials say social justice matters more than social distance. And you write about how for months, health experts told Americans to stay home. And now there's some encouragement for the public to join these mass protests. Is there some hypocrisy in saying go join a mass protest, but don't go to a Trump rally?
Well, David, that's exactly the kind of question I wanted to get to 10 days ago or so when I first noticed health experts who had become prominent commentators on coronavirus and had encouraged Americans to stay home. Now they were encouraging Americans to go join the protests over police brutality. And I think it's understandable why lots of Americans are perplexed. The message wasn't just stay home to protect yourself. It was stay home to protect others. All of us can be vectors of disease. Many people who have COVID-19 may not know it. They may not be visibly sick, but could potentially infect others. And public health experts, in encouraging Americans to take part in these rallies, as inspiring and moving and important as the cause might be, I think that muddles for Americans who wanted to do other things that may not be as important as combating structural racism, but pretty important too, keeping their businesses open, attending funerals. Now this issue of the president and political rallies, my understanding from people I've talked to in the administration is once they saw the mass protests over police brutality, that became a path for the president to get back on the road because he and his team would be able to say, look, we've had Democrat after Democrat go out and join these rallies, say they're okay, bless them and participate in them. Why can't we have our own rallies, even if the cause is a little bit different?
But we're seeing almost today seems to be a turning point, Dan Diamond, with the new numbers for the spread of COVID. We're seeing stock market again having a really bad day. Last I checked, they were down 1,000 points. I don't know where it is now. And there, it may be another day of trying to, we have to reassess where we are, not just in the public health sphere, but also in how this impacts public policy. Is that happening?
Well, I'm going to challenge you on that, because I think any day can be a turning point day, especially in America in 2020. The idea that new numbers are out that are causing concern, that's absolutely right. And it's not just Texas, it's states all over the country, but especially in the heartland, states that may have avoided the early days of the pandemic, but are now showing real spikes. But that's been a building trend for several weeks now. It did not get as much attention in the recent days when police brutality ate up the headlines. But what I am looking at is, are the states that are now dealing with these spikes, are they prepared to handle it? Arizona has activated its hospitals to emergency capacity. The White House remains very focused on its own goal of long-term treatment and vaccine. So who is going to step into the void and offer the messaging on what needs to happen next? I'm still not sure about that. But it's much more muddled than we were a few weeks ago because, and I hear this in my role as a political reporter, there are many conservatives now who will push back on the same public health experts and say, why weren't you raising concerns about mass protests? Now you're concerned about Trump's rally. That seems hypocritical.
Will Trump's rally have anything to try to have some public health concerns? I mean, will there be masks? Will that be allowed or required? Will there be temperature checks at the door? Or do they just want to pretend like there is no COVID-19?
My understanding is that there will be some precautionary measures taken here in Washington, D.C. When we go to the White House and my colleagues go to the White House or other government buildings, there are screening processes in place. I don't know for sure what next week will look like or what the rallies will look like with President Trump, who's famously a germaphobe, will almost certainly take lots of precautions for himself. I'm sure that will extend out in some way toward the rally, but he's also sent horrible messages on the need for masks. The president has repeatedly appeared in places where everyone else is wearing a mask, but not him, including at a swab manufacturer, a company that was working on swabs for coronavirus just a number of days ago. That company had to junk all the swabs that they were working on that day. They haven't been specific on why, but it seems clear that Trump walking around the factory floor without protection might have been a cause.
Dan Diamond, we got to let you go. We thank you so much for joining us. And your podcast with your interview with the Surgeon General, Jerome Adams, deserves a hard listen from anyone who wants to dive into that fascinating individual. Thanks for joining us. And when we come back from the
stay safe in Texas.
Yeah. And when we come back from the break, we'll continue our conversation as about protesting safely in the time of coronavirus. The number to call in about your concerns. Have you joined a protest or did you decide not to protest? 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about protesting in the time of the pandemic. Have you decided that you didn't really just chuck the concerns about the coronavirus? I'm going out there because my voice is important. I'm going to stand with my brothers and sisters and talk about why we need to reform police here. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Or did you decide, I really wanted to go, otherwise I would be out there, but because I cannot get sick, I have too many people depending on me, I can't do that. I have to stay home. So how did the pandemic weigh on your decisions on about protesting? 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Avon Connor, the PhD professor of epidemiology at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health, as we see numbers in Texas and other southern states continue to tick up, do you think that we're going to get to the point where governors are going to have to go back and close down malls and restaurants and stores and things like, and basically admit that we should not have reopened?
That's a very good question, and I'm curious to see how political leaders will address these issues. I think that we should also take a step back and think about what actually has been done to give the message of risk-reducing strategies when out in public. Are governors mandating that masks be worn? I know a lot of states have given this decision to the stores to make a decision, like if you were able to come in and shop, must you have a mask on or not? And I think it should go back to the governor saying, this is something that we should actually be doing. We know it works. And exactly, I have a great example here of almost like a natural experiment where we've actually seen a hair salon in Springfield, Missouri. Two stylists actually had confirmed coronavirus, were working symptomatically, and wore their mask. The customers had masks on as well. So far, no customers have had issues with coronavirus or reported positive results for testing. So that just gives an example of what wearing masks can do, practicing social distancing in businesses, and keeping up the good work that we've done to try to curb the spread. But if it just got a hand, especially looking at hospitalizations as a marker of where we're going with this, I think that the governors will have to take a strong look at what to do next.
Monique Jimenez, Doctor of Science, Epidemiology Professor at the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health. We've seen a lot of tear gas, a lot of pepper spray sprayed right in the face of people as they protest. How does that relate to if I have COVID-19? We know that is a respiratory illness, and if I get sprayed with this respiratory this lung irritant, is that going to compound what my condition would be?
It may. We know that pepper spray and tear gas damage the respiratory tissue, the lining of the respiratory and the digestive tract, may lead to a accumulation of fluid in the lungs. Certainly immediately people are coughing, they're sneezing, we see an increase in mucus production, and then crying. So you have an increase in fluid production. We know that COVID-19 is primarily transmitted through droplets, so aerosolization of droplets. And then especially, you know, for those who do have underlying conditions, you may exacerbate those conditions, and if you have an irritation of the respiratory lining, you may potentially increase risk of infection when exposed or exposed at a high enough concentration. So there are definitely concerns around the uses of those tactics.
Let's go to the phone lines. The number is 833-TPR-TALK, and Gina has called in. Hi, Gina. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hey, hello. Thanks for taking my call. Listen, I wanted to go to the protest very much so. Seeing an American being killed on the streets like that, broad daylight, that just bothered me beyond belief. I was born in 61, and I've seen a lot of things happen. It's not getting any better. So I wanted to go to the protest, but then for me, I thought COVID is real, and I'm not going to give people a chance to kill me by going down there and you know, possibly catching that disease. And it kind of bothered me that, you know, I couldn't go because I know that's real. And so I'm trying to find other ways, you know, to, you know, maybe donate money and such.
All right.
But I'm a little worried.
Gina, thank you for the call. So Avon Connor, what would you say to someone like Gina? I mean, she's genuinely worried about her health. She's got people who depend on her. She can't get sick. And so she doesn't want to go out to protest. That seems to be a pretty mature decision.
Yes, and Gina has really important concerns. And she raises a good issue. It's not just about if I protect myself. COVID has shown us that it's also about how others are wearing masks and protecting themselves from others as well. So it's not just a risk that I'm taking, it's a risk that other people are taking. And even if I go out and have the best PPE I can to protect myself, it's still dependent upon others wearing the same amount of protective equipment or protective face shields and masks and goggles to protect me from them as well. So Other ideas, kind of what we talked about before, are doing maybe drive or caravan protesting where you're in your car, and maybe you can set up people in your neighborhood to do the same, to do almost like a parade to just show your support and say, these are the issues we want to have highlighted, and I want to do my part, even though I'm not physically protesting in a group with others, putting myself at risk. I could think of other ways to safely protest, also through social media networks, and also Gina raised a good point, maybe donating to certain charities or other entities that would help young Black Americans with scholarships or additional types of donations.
Avon, looking at the statistics, U.S. statistics for fatalities with the people who get infected with and hospitalized by COVID-19, African Americans are twice as likely to die from it than white Americans. We don't know why that is. We know that it has a lot to do with the problems we have with our healthcare system, access to healthcare. But this tells us that if you're African American, you're really taking a bigger risk. And a lot of the people in the protest are African Americans, so that's something to consider as well.
It is, and also a lot of people think, oh, I'm young, I probably won't have the bad outcomes if I get it. And we've actually seen here at Hopkins some research showing that it's not just if you are having these other issues with comorbid conditions such as hypertension, diabetes, heart disease among older people, but being young and also being overweight or obese is actually showing us a strong predictor of having bad outcomes among people who are eventually have COVID-19 after being exposed. And so keeping those personal risk factors in your mind of I'm a minority, I might be predispositioned to have certain conditions, I should probably think about ways to reduce my risk. And if that means I shouldn't protest out with others, or if I am going to make the decision to protest, I really need to take these safety measures to protect myself and protect my quarantine bubble or my family.
Now, Monique Jimenez, just looking at the spread of the virus doesn't care what party you are, doesn't care if you're wearing a MAGA hat or if you're chanting at the riot. The virus is the virus. So we're going to have people there's going to be more people getting COVID-19 because of these protests. I mean, that's just the fact of life. I mean, we can't sugarcoat that, right? What are we looking at? How bad could it get?
I think we don't know. One of the things that has been so tricky for us as a country and as a species, you know, because this is a pandemic, is the uncertainty. There is a lot that we're still learning. We're still learning a lot about the transmission of COVID by asymptomatic individuals. At the beginning, we thought that they may be some of the strongest drivers. Now, new evidence is suggesting perhaps that's not the case. So we're learning every day. And one of the things that also is challenging is that not all the data have been standardized. We are still also seeing pockets that are being hit later than some of the other very large urban centers. So I think we agree generally that, you know, any type of large gathering increases the risk of transmission. We're also concerned with people perhaps going to multiple protests. And you referred to before as a seeding event. So one of the recommendations that was also, you know, stated before by Dr. Connors is get tested 7 to 10 days after a protest and self-quarantine. So asking protesters perhaps to not serially go to multiple protests, but self-quarantine after to help reduce the risk of.
I want to squeeze in one last caller, just really, really quick. We don't have a lot of time here, but Manny, I wanted to get you on the air. Go right ahead, Manny, you're on the air.
I am very much against the so-called medical experts and anyone who favors protests and rallies that will result in hundreds of thousands of people dead in the next year until we get the vaccine.
All right, Manny, thank you for that. So he's saying public health should be the top concern. Really quickly, Avon Connor, you've got about 45 seconds.
Well, public health is the top concern. As I first started the conversation, racism is a public health problem, and a lot of these injustices are fueling into the COVID-19 pandemic as well.
And really quickly, 20 seconds, Monique Jimenez, you get the last word here.
I I just want to echo what Dr. Connor says. Structural racism is a public health emergency, and it needs to be addressed.
All right. This is a moment in time. People realize that they cannot wait any longer. We cannot wait for a vaccine. They want to protest now, and because they feel this is the time to act now. And maybe a positive change will come from that. But still, there is COVID-19 out in the atmosphere. People are spreading it, and the results could be very grim. I want to thank all of our guests, Monique Jimenez, Doctor of Science, Epidemiology Professor at Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health, and Avon Connor, PhD, Professor of Epidemiology at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. We encourage everyone to be safe. If you decide to be protest, be safe. Lots of things you can do to minimize your risk. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Ken Johnson and Dallas Williams, with production assistance provided by me, Ruben Garcia. Dan Katz is TPR's news director. Support for The Source comes from contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.